The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 2:20 a.m., July 14th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
This is our test. What kind of a people are we, and what kind of a country are we going to build? It's up to us.
Hi. Thank you for taking the time for some activism news with K-Voice of Resistance. I'm Kelly. Okay, I have a correction to make. I totally spoke an error last episode in regards to the Larsen CI shelf. I wrongly and embarrassingly said that there is no recorded data of an event so large as the breaking off of the ice shelf, which is the size of Delaware. I was very wrong. There have been larger breaks. Now, granted, this is big enough that maps will need to be redrawn, but it by no means is the largest. There was a 4,000 square mile berg, famously dubbed the B-15 in 2000. There was one twice the size of this one that broke off, called the Ross Ice Shelf, Antarctica's largest floating ice body. It was the biggest iceberg ever recorded. And the Larsen C itself even lost a bigger piece in 1986 under completely different circumstances. So I apologize. May it never happen again. All right, let's get on with the news. We have so much to get to today. On Wednesday, people stepped up. The resistance took action in an effort to save net neutrality. Activists advocating for a free and open internet rallied individuals to submit over 2 million comments and millions of emails and phone calls to the FCC in support of net neutrality. Popular sites across the web, from Yelp to Pornhub, urged users to contact the FCC and Congress with a singular message. Don't let internet service providers create faster and slower connections to boost their profit margins. The result of the work of those advocates? 5 million emails, 124,000 calls to Congress, all while protesters actually visited 20 congressional offices. And the 2 million comments made to the FCC almost tripled the previous record that was made during the Internet Slowdown Advocacy Day on September 10th, 2014. Even if they didn't take action, tens of millions of users saw the messages plastered across the web. Big sites like Reddit, Twitter, Netflix, Spotify, Airbnb, and Amazon all slowed down their sites to show people what it would be like without net neutrality. They urged advocacy or pointed users to sites like battleforthenet.com. Go check it out. Battleforthenet.com supplied pre-made form letters to fire off to the FCC and routed users to their congressional representatives' phone numbers. The stock message to the agency, echoed by statements from such sites and internet advocates, is simple. Don't do anything. So, will they listen? We don't know. Should this be an issue that flares your interest, make your voice heard. We are running out of time on this. The head of the SEC, and man most likely to sell his children to the highest bidder, Ajit Pai, continues to push back against the free and open internet. Betsy DeVos and grandmother not allowed to play with the baby is in the news. She is debating getting rid of a 2011 guidance rolled out by the Obama administration that basically was aimed at encouraging students who have been harassed or sexually assaulted to report what happened to them to the school and seek justice. The guidance includes a provision that says universities should use a lower standard of evidence in college disciplinary hearings than that of used in criminal trials. See, people who've been assaulted or harassed shouldn't have to sit in class with those who did the harassing or assaulting. In the middle of all this, the Education Department's acting civil rights chief, Candace Jackson. Now, she is the one who claimed that she was discriminated against for being white. Is apologizing for making this comment. And I'm going to do my best to repeat it out loud without hurling this microphone through the window. Candace said, quote, "The accusations, 90% of them, fall into the category of, we were both drunk, we broke up, and 6 months later, I found myself under a Title IX investigation because she just decided that our last sleeping together was not quite right," unquote. Whew. I'm not going to dignify this with a response or an explanation as to why this disgusting, ignorant, victim-blaming statement is so stunningly wrong and offensive, because I assume anyone listening knows why. In fact, if anyone listening does not see or understand why that statement is so offensive and incorrect, please message me on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance. I'm very interested in having a conversation about it, and I'll be totally cool about it. I won't lose my mind at you. I mean it, okay? All right, let's see. DeVos held a 90-minute meeting with survivors, hearing their stories, while about 150 demonstrators stood outside. Again, I don't know where this will go, but we need to speak out in support of campus protections for assault victims. If this is something that inspires you to action, contact DeVos in any way necessary. Well, in any legal way necessary, I mean. Assault victims need men's voices in this fight, too. Men are victims of sexual assault as well. It is hard for survivors to speak for themselves, and sometimes they need others to speak for them and with them. Other news... The resistance has continued its efforts to kill the GOP's Obamacare replacement bill, KillCare. We could be in the final week or two to kill it off for good,
so keep at it.
McConnell unveiled the new revised healthcare bill and... It still blows. We are down to the wire, and this time we need to stay diligent because things have the potential to move very fast here. As the bill stands, Medicaid still morphs into a system of fixed per-person payments to the states, payments that wouldn't keep up with the expected rise in healthcare cost, and the Medicaid expansion would still be rolled back. The Republican bill would create a fund to make payments to insurers for the cost of covering high-risk people enrolled in health plans for the exchanges, but the fund isn't nearly enough. People could get tax credits to help pay for catastrophic health insurance plans and could use tax-favored health savings accounts. Republicans love to dole out tax credits, but lower-income Americans don't have enough income for it to be of any use to them. Like the previous bill, this would end the requirement that most Americans have health coverage, so younger, healthier people wouldn't have to be in the same insurance pool as older, sicker people. This would also raise premiums and cost for older and sicker people. And then, there's this. The new Republican amendment introduced Thursday night would allow states to waive Obamacare's ban on pre-existing conditions. This means that insurers would once again, under certain circumstances, charge sick people higher premiums than healthy people. Republican legislatures love this policy well enough to offer it a new amendment. They do not, however, seem to like it enough to have it apply to themselves or their staff.
That's right.
A spokesperson for Tom MacArthur, Republican from New Jersey, who authored this amendment, confirmed this was the case. Members of Congress and their staff would get the guarantee of keeping these Obamacare regulations. They gave themselves a damn exemption to the horrible rule. How's that of the people, for the people, and by the people?
It's not supposed to work that way, guys.
Okay, there is one interesting thing, and it's a notable change. The bill would keep the two taxes imposed by Obamacare on the people with high incomes, the 3.8% tax on investment income and the 0.9% payroll tax. The taxes apply to individuals with incomes over $200,000 and couples with income over $250,000. Wasn't the whole purpose of this repeal and replace exercise to cut taxes for the wealthy? Well... Robert Reich suggests that perhaps Senate Republican leaders want to use the budget savings from this bill to allow them to pass an even bigger tax cut for wealthy Americans under the reconciliation rule requiring just 51 votes. So wealthy Americans would still come out way ahead. But, you know.
We'll see.
The Congressional Budget Office will report on the new bill early next week. McConnell wants to take up the revised bill next week, but he won't move ahead if it doesn't have the votes to pass. So keep pushing, guys. Keep on your senators. I know this has been a long fight, but it is a worthy one. Also in the news is our president. Our president is an idiot. Outside of reducing France's first lady down to a pile of body parts, he also... Okay, he is nuts. Just, he's crazy. I try not to talk about the man in general. Everyone else is doing that for me. But this is just too ridiculous, and I had to say something. Vanity Fair reports that Donald was talking to reporters aboard Air Force One on Wednesday night about the $21 billion big beautiful wall, and our president offered several perplexing new details about his plans. First of all, he insisted that he was not joking about adding the solar panels, but then he went on to say that the wall needs one thing. Transparency. You have to be able to see through it, he explained. Quote, in other words, if you can't see through the wall, so it can be a steel wall with openings, but you have to have the openings because you have to see what's on the other side of the wall. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw large sacks of drugs over, and if you have people on the other side of the wall, you don't see them. They hit you on the head with the 60 pounds of stuff. It's over. Crazy as it sounds, you need transparency through the wall. But we have some incredible designs. Unquote. Wow. You know, to get a minimum wage job in this country, you have to pass an interview, show basic competence in performing duties on that job, pass a background check, pass drug testing. For president, we'll just take your word for it. Ugh. Okay, enough Donald news. In case the next piece of news got lost in the muck and the mire of Russian intrigue and orange tweet storms, the Democratic Party has had two victories this week, and in Oklahoma, nonetheless. Winning 54% of the vote was Democrat Michael Brooks, who will be the new state senator of District 44 in Southwest Oklahoma City metro area. The state Senate seat has been vacant since former Senator Ralph Shortley resigned amid, get this, child prostitution allegations.
Yes.
And winning with 52% of the vote in Tulsa's House District 75, voters picked Karen Gaddis to replace former state rep Dan Kirby, who resigned following investigations into sexual harassment claims by a former assistant.
What is going on in Oklahoma?
Right here. At this level of government, this is where it starts. Both of these were dark red Trump-majority districts, and the Democratic Party is now 4-for-4 in flipping state legislature seats across the country. I would call that momentum. We must keep track of our local elections. They are in many ways more important than national ones, especially as we near the time for redistricting. We must take power of gerrymandering away from the conservatives. So pay attention and vote. If you do nothing else, vote. So, California's lieutenant governor, the dashing Gavin Newsom, was on Morning Joe, and he has a message for Democrats that I want to project into the skies like a bat signal.
Could you explain to Democrats out there and your base how talking about Russia on the campaign trail is not going
to
get you back in power?
And I don't know what more evidence you need. I mean, at the end of the day, even if you game this thing out, you get rid of Trump.
Right.
You're left with a guy who's out there talking about conversion therapy. Doesn't do anything for the Democratic Party in our agenda. So unless we deal with the issues of economic anxiety, cultural issues in a substantive way, and we get in the how business and we actually demonstrate with some acuity and strength a clear conviction in terms of the fate and future of this country, then we're never going to take back
that makes sense.
These state losses.
I spent the election screaming something similar to the TV. I don't think we win with attack ads. We win with a message and a plan, a dumbed down plan. If it's possible for Dems to dumb down and simplify, that is. Gavin will likely be the next governor of California. He is a good guy. And here's hoping he has solutions to help the income gap in California. Do you realize liberal blue California is the greatest income gap in the nation? Public Policy Institute of California and the census show that before taxes and income from safety net programs are factored in, California households at the top 10% of incomes made 17 times more than households at the bottom 10%. Luckily, California is a blue state. And the difference between us and red states, any kind of wage gap, is we have a robust safety net. Once you factor in both taxes and safety net supports, The disparity shrinks by almost half, with the top tier collecting 8 times the income of the bottom tier. The bottom shrinkage of the gap is due more to the buttressing of incomes for the poor than due to the income-reducing effects of taxes of the rich. The research indicates that policies such as earned income tax credits, which provide sizable income boost to many low-income working families in the form of annual refundable tax credits, does a great deal to reduce the effect of inequality in California. Now, that does not make the absurd income gap reasonable or okay, and it needs to be addressed. But the point still stands that should this be a red state, such protections would not exist. The bottom 10% would be told that it was their fault for not pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and becoming millionaires on their own. Then they'd throw another tax break to the rich, deregulate something for fun, and carry on with their day. Do you realize? I saw this breakdown, and it's pretty excellent. A gallon of milk costs approximately $3.75. At $3.75, a person who makes minimum wage, $7.25 per hour, has to work a half an hour to pay for that gallon of milk. A median-age worker at $16.57 per hour has to work 13 minutes to pay for the same $3.75 gallon of milk. Now, a CEO making $20,160 per hour only has to work 0.01 seconds for that same gallon of milk. How's that for perspective? And that is exactly where many politicians want us, working long hours to keep us away from their business, the business of being active participants in their democracy, their oligarchy.
And I love all people, rich or poor, but in those particular positions, I just don't want a poor person. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? If you insist, I'll do it, but I like it better this way, right?
Donald did not happen in a vacuum. Income inequality fed his rise to power.
We believe in the idea that no matter who you are, no matter what you look like, no matter where you came from, no matter what your circumstances were, if you work hard, if you take responsibility, then America's a place where you can make something of your lives.
So why has this gap only widened? Why haven't more people pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and become millionaires?
The great capitalism experiment seems to have stumbled somewhere.
Since we started with California, let's use Silicon Valley as an example. Robert Reich again points out, and if you're not following him on Facebook, I highly suggest you do. He's fantastic. He points out that Apple was founded in 1976, Amazon in 1994, Google in 1998, and Facebook in 2004. We haven't seen a startup success since. Why? Because the big four have consolidated their market power and squashed potential competition by 1. Buying out fledgling companies' slightest whiff of competition. They can also afford teams of lawyers to bring copyright lawsuits against startups with similar ideas. 2. Making their platforms so standard that everyone else has to use them. Even new entrants can't operate without them. And 3. Spending millions every year on lobbying to protect their positions from government action. Although European antitrust officials levied $2.7 billion fine against Google for unfairly exploiting its market power, the U.S. Justice Department and Federal Trade Commission have done little or nothing. Between 1978 and 2011, as new giants gained control across the economy, the rate of new business in the United States has nearly halved. If we are going to restore competition and innovation in this sector, we must curb the market of such kingpins.
Regulations with the side of antitrust laws, anyone?
Please? Anywhere? Where is Elizabeth Warren when you need her? Well, we know the gap will only grow and new businesses will only drown in the next 4 years thanks to the flooding swamp. A new report from New York Times and ProPublica has identified 71 industry appointees, including 28 with potential conflicts. Just a few examples. At the Education Department, our favorite, 3 members of the deregulation team previously worked for charter school advocacy groups and for-profit college operators. The department has already begun to roll back student loan protections and could potentially save for-profit colleges millions of dollars. We've got the chairwoman of the deregulation team for the EPA, was formerly president of the Rule of Law Defense Fund, an organization tied to the oil industry and has lobbied against clean air laws. A senior appointee in the Department of Housing and Urban Development still owns a $50,000 stake in a real estate company where she previously worked, whose value could be greatly boosted by HUD's policies. And to hide these conflicts of interest, Donald's administration has refused to release correspondence and calendars of government officials. Some former lobbyists have even received special ethics waivers to work in government. You will notice our democracy shrinking as our corporate overlords dominate our government to a degree we've never seen before. And then there's this. The constricting of our democracy is not only happening at the national level, it is happening at the local level as well. Think about all the cliched talking points we hear the conservatives in office bloviate about. One of the big ones is
state rights.
State rights. At a time when Democrats are locked out of power for the White House, both chambers of Congress, the majority of governor's offices, and three-fifths of the country's state houses, liberal ideas like equality, environmental standards, things like pay raises, LGBTQ rights, and banning fracking has few safe harbors. So those ideas are regulated to the liberal cities tucked away in these red states. Even that power center, though, is increasingly under attack. The red states that govern these cities banned sanctuary cities. They've even banned the number of bans. It is now illegal for Michigan cities to ban plastic bags.
What?
And even for Texas towns to ban fracking. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, a Republican, has been a vocal advocate for state laws that he says are necessary to protect individual liberty from local government overreach.
Right.
When cities overstep their bounds, he said this year, they, quote, should have to pay a price for it, unquote. In recent years, Republican-controlled state legislatures have intensified their use of what are known as preemption laws to block towns and cities from adopting measures they favored by the left. The states aren't merely overruling local laws. They have walled off whole new realms where local governments aren't allowed to govern at all. It's all part of the overall Republican plan to strip down the middle and lower class, to take away healthcare, increase the wage gap, as well as increase equality rifts. The supremacy of local control is central to the Republican plans for undoing Obamacare, rolling back regulations, and leaving the federal minimum wage unchanged. Wages, the party said in its platform last year, should be handed out at a state and local level. Well, some cities are fighting back. Texas's four largest cities are now suing the state in response. And these examples of stripping power leads us to our next topic. Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman was an American economist who received the 1976 Nobel Memorial Prize for Economic Sciences. Friedman wrote, quote, "Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. That, I believe, is our basic function. To develop alternatives to existing policies to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes politically inevitable." Unquote. A people in crisis can rise up and demand their own change, a change for the better. A people under a dictator can rise up and fight for a democracy. Or a government can decimate a population's political power overnight. Large-scale shocks are frequently used to ram through despised pro-corporate and anti-democratic policies that would never have been feasible in normal times, the likes of which we've seen after 9/11, in New Orleans after Katrina. Check out Friday's show and get the detailed story on how all that went down after Katrina and was orchestrated by a man who said he missed the Inquisition, Mike Pence, nonetheless. We've also saw it happen in Flint with their emergency manager. It is unfolding right now in Puerto Rico with their ongoing debt crisis, which has been used to install the unaccountable Financial Oversight and Management Board, which is stripping the people of pensions and schools. Other countries are very familiar with this as well. Chile after the US-led coup of Augusto Pinochet. And I'm gonna say it, Hitler. Hitler used the Reichstag fire, Adolf, who had become chancellor just 1 month before, declared that it was part of the communist plot to overthrow the government. The next day, a law was signed essentially suspending all civil liberties, and Hitler quickly purged his political opponents from government and consolidated the Nazis' party's grip on power. I'm talking about the shock doctrine. Naomi Klein has important lessons to pass on to be sure that when a large-scale shock occurs during this administration, we are prepared. We have handled many of the small shocks had endowed by this current government pretty well. We took to the streets, crippling and stalling the Muslim ban. And at the shock of stripping the people of healthcare, we are fighting on our feet, somewhat successfully. And the chaos of this regime has not relented for 6 months. Yet we still fight. Klein writes, quote, Donald Trump has never allowed the atmosphere of chaos and crisis to let up. Some of the chaos, like Russia investigations, has been foisted upon him, or is simply the result of his incompetence. But much appears to be deliberately created. Either way, while we are distracted by and addicted to the Trump show, clicking on and gasping at the material hand slaps and mysterious orbs, the quiet, methodical work of redistributing wealth upwards proceeds apace. Unquote. She goes on to explain about Donald's massive download of executive orders. This, too, was done on purpose. Changes over time allow for people to react, but a bunch all at once is too much to handle. Quote, the hope is that populations will rapidly become exhausted and overwhelmed and will ultimately swallow their bitter medicine. Unquote. All this we have been experiencing is the shock doctrine's baby cubs. It is the most that Donald can pull off behind the curtain of the shocks he is generating himself. He, Bannon, or whoever it is pulling his strings, is biding their time and waiting for a terror attack or a large-scale natural disaster or economic crisis like 2008. Whatever it is. And once that shock occurs, the beast will rear its head, and if we are not prepared, it will be too late. We need to be prepared for each possibility now. And yes, I talked about this last episode, but as I said, I believe it is the most important thing that we can learn right now. Naomi Klein has a 5-step plan for us so we can resist Donald and his cronies when the time comes. Here is rule one.
What would happen if a horror like the one in Manchester took place on U.S. soil? Based on Trump's obvious fondness for authoritarianism, we can expect him to impose some sort of state of exception or emergency, where the usual rules of democracy no longer apply. Protests and strikes that block roads and airports, like the ones that sprung up to resist the Muslim travel ban, would likely be declared a threat to national security. Protest organizers would be targeted under anti-terror legislation, with surveillance, arrests, and imprisonment. With public signs of dissent suppressed, the truly toxic to-do list would quickly bubble up, bring in the feds to pacify the streets. Muzzle investigative journalism. You know he's itching to.
You weren't called. Sit down.
The courts, who Trump would inevitably blame for the attacks, might well lose their courage. And the most lethal shock we need to prepare for? A push for a full-blown foreign war. And no, it won't matter if the target has no connection to the attacks used to justify it.
What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing.
Preparing for all this is crucial. If we know what to expect, we won't be that shocked. We'll just be pissed, and that's important for step two.
Next episode, I want to talk about one or more of the possible shocks that we will be faced with and see how they might be harnessed to start kicking off items on Donald's to-do list. And we will also get to more of Naomi Klein's rules. Okay, before I go, I have some personal news. I and the show have been asked by CitizenTruth.org to be a contributor. Citizen Truth is alternative news for free thinkers, independents, and political misfits. With the goal of finding the truth in every situation to create a forum for a healthy debate and a variety of viewpoints in an effort to break down the left-right paradigm and to widen the scope of viewpoints and ideas representing the mainstream. They care about two things, guys. Truth, making the world a better place, which is okay with me. Again, they are at citizentruth.org. You will be surprised to hear I am one of the liberal voices on the site. Now, to be clear, my show is on their site, and I will be writing for them, but my home, of course, is crab diving. And my show still links back to the crabs. So I haven't strayed. Okay, guys, thank you for listening to my show. Thank you for caring enough to stay informed and activated. I know the desire to shut down, shut it all out, and turn inward can be strong. I also know how busy everyone is, especially with summer here. Lots of vacations, lots of family stuffs, beach time, whatever it is. I'm contending with that myself. It's important to tell ourselves that just because we can't do everything doesn't mean we should not do anything. One phone call in a month, one protest, an email, anything and everything counts. Hell, these days, simply being an informed person is an amazing thing. So I appreciate all the listens and downloads. You can find my show at crabdiving.com, that's crabdiving.com under the K-Voice tab. Listen to the other great programming on the network. You can also download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. And now, of course, you can find my show at Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice or on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.